Hello and welcome to the Poetry Exchange. I'm Michael Schaefer.
And I'm Fiona Bennett.
We're really, really excited. We've got a very special episode to bring you this month. It's a feature-length episode, and it's the episode from Latitude Festival, where we were guests in the listening post.
Just as you say all of that, Michael, I was transported back to that beautiful, beautiful space that was created. I mean, the whole site, all the whole everything, but in particular, the faraway forest where the listening post was.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, because we were quite busy getting ready to do this, I didn't appreciate the full beauty of the faraway forest until after we'd done it. And that night, I walked back through the faraway forest and it was just brilliant, beautiful, multicoloured lighting things in the forest and full bracken. I remember seeing.
Absolutely. And in the middle of all of that, of course, we had some poetry and some very special guests. And it was just terrific, wasn't it? We had a lovely time. It was a bit of an experiment for us. It's something we've never done before, recording the podcast in front of an audience, and something that we've thought about quite a lot and how it might work. And it seemed to go okay, I think.
It did seem to go okay.
I think we were sort of quite happy with it. So it's going to be really interesting to hear how people find it. So it'd be great to get any kind of responses.
Oh yeah, it would be really good. I think the episode will kind of reveal all the many dimensions for itself. But I do just want to say, it was so great to just hear the poems in that space and in that place.
Yeah, I think there was something really special about... I read out one of the poems that you'll hear in the episode, and it was really great to be reading out poems in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And to be kind of sharing them in that space in that way, yeah. I think we should probably let the...
proof of the pudding be in the eating.
Very good, Fee. Yeah, we should. And just kind of press play and let everybody hear what we got up to.
Yeah, I think we should do just that. Wow, that was seriously good cheering. Seriously,
hello.
Seriously good cheering.
Hello.
I'm Fiona.
And I'm Michael. Nice to see you all.
Thank you very much for getting here this morning, getting out of your tents, your places of sleep, your bunkers, I don't know, wherever you were. It's brilliant that you're here. We've been doing this thing which is talking to people about the poem that's been a friend to them. And we've been doing that all over the place, collecting stories of connection. What's the poem that's played a part in your life? It goes on being incredibly mind-blowing, and we've got two fabulous guests who are going to join us in a short while. And we're going to hear about the poems that have been a friend to them. So just because we're in the poetry place, we thought we would read a poem to get us going. Because we're in the faraway forest, I thought I'd choose this one, Michael. So I'm going to just give this a read and then we'll bring our guests on. The Song of Wandering Angus by William Butler Yeats. I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head, and cut and peeled a hazel wand and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire aflame, but something rustled on the floor and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair, who called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old and wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone and kiss her lips and take her hands and walk among long dappled grass and pluck till times and times are done, the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. So, I don't know if anybody... I don't know, I just sort of thought it might be the sort of thing that might have happened last night to somebody.
Oh, lovely. Thanks, Faye. Okay, I'm standing up because we've got two really, really exciting guests. Absolutely thrilled to have writer Hannah Jane Walker and singer-songwriter, Mercury Music-nominated artist Nadine Shah. Please come up and join us. Hello.
Heya.
You all right?
Fair to middling.
Now, Nadine has brought a poem in and we're going to have a conversation about that. And then to say thank you for bringing it in a way as part of the exchange of this process, Hannah is then going to read it out a second time and then vice versa with Hannah's poem. I don't know if that makes sense, but it all will. So, Nadine, we're going to kick off with you. Can I ask you to start by just telling us what the poem is and then reading it out loud for us?
So it's called Days and it's by Philip Larkin. What are days? Days are where we live. They come, they wake us time and time again. They are to be happy in. Where else can we live but days? Ah, solving that question brings the priest and the doctor in their long white coats running over the fields. Was that right?
It was brilliant. Thank you.
Well, I did have it. I had it painted on my ceiling when I was younger. So you should hope. Oh, I should hope I'd still remember.
So hang on, you painted this on your bedroom ceiling. How old were you?
Oh, wasn't that 20? I'd moved to London when I was 17, and I went back to Newcastle for a bit. Like, I fell in love with some boy. He didn't like me back, and I was like, I'm leaving. And I went back to Newcastle and realised I'd made a massive mistake. I was like, But my parents wouldn't, I had no money at the time, and I needed financial help to get back. And my parents were like, no, lady, you need to stay put for a bit and figure out what you need to do next and take your time with it. And so I did all these things to try and convince my parents that I'd gone insane so that they would let me go back. And one of those, there was a lot of things I did to make them convinced I was insane. And one of them was just doing this. I wrote this poem on the ceiling. And then on the walls, I think I just wrote, like, what do you do when you are bored? What do you do when you are bored? Like 1,000 times. Hey. Shouldn't have really told that story out loud. But yes, I know all the words to that poem. I really like it.
Why this one?
I studied English literature. When I left Newcastle, during my A-levels, to be a jazz singer in London. And then I kind of regretted not completing my A-levels. So I did my A-S's and A-2's in 1 year, and I had this amazing English teacher called Tim. Well fit. And it does help me, it does help. And he brought poetry to life for me. Because my mother... Lovely lady, she's always been obsessed with the romantic poets and would like take us to Lake District and stuff like that. I'm like, get this in you. And they never really spoke to me so much. And I think I preferred Philip Larkin's plain speak because it's how I speak and it's how I think and how I understand stuff. And especially with this poem, it just resonated with me because Tim then started explaining it. And it was a lot of it's to do with mental health. I'm a mental health advocate also and work in that field very, very much. And because it's just, he'd explained it. It was just so simple, but it's funny, this poem as well, because it's kind of talking about the day, imagine it, in a box, and then anything that exists, and that's kind of normality. And then anything that exists outside of this box and outside of the day, then you get the priest and the doctor, you get science and religion, you know, telling you that you're wrong. And that's, I think it's a very important poem, especially for those that are suffering from mental illnesses, especially for the weirdos, especially for the outsider. I think it really champions them and it flips it. onto the ones who judge, I think.
So do you, you have had it painted on the wall. It's you've said some things there about how it's a kind of companion to your kind of beliefs. Is it still kind of there for you, this poem? Is it still kind of, has it changed its kind of place in your life?
Yeah, I think like I get asked about my job a lot. Why do you do your job? What makes somebody good at doing your job? And I think it's a heightened sense of empathy. If you're going to be a good songwriter, a good storyteller, then you have to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and properly understand how they feel. And then I've had massive struggles with my own mental health over the years. And so the context of this poem kind of changes now and again for me, but it is one that I do check in on it now and again, and I do gift it to people also. And I love that about it. I love sharing stories. I love sharing words. And some very, very close friends, and even people that I've just met, you know, in a toilet queue, crying, I've recited this poem to them. So I carry it with me all the time. I really love it. I
think you really carry it here as well, though, don't you? You know, it's not kind of just up here.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think it's really beautiful, and that's why I really love that lad, Philip Larkin. And so often, he gets people always call him like a miserable bugger, don't they? Whereas I think he's anything but a miserable bugger. I think he's a really beautiful, beautiful, kind soul. And it's reflective in that. He makes an anthem for the weirdos there. And it's a really lovely thing.
I really love the way the poem is split into those two really sort of simple blocks of text. A lot of people, when they're talking about poetry, they talk about the black and the white, and just that it's just that arrangement of the black and the white. And he's just done that so beautifully there with that sort of simple, like you're saying, language that we speak that is just every day. And then he just goes into this mind-blowing image of the priest and the doctor in their long coats running over the fields.
Yeah, and even like when he says like that, running over the fields, it's like they're the manic ones, like they're wildly running over the fields. But it seems almost like a conversation between a parent and child. Like, what are days? Days are where we live. They come, they wake us from over. They are to be happy in. And it's quite straight there. And then it completely changes its character, and there's this like proper sense of urgency in the second stanza, which is just, yeah, it takes you by surprise, and it's very powerful.
That's brilliant, that the simplicity of they are to be happy in.
Yeah.
It's terrific, isn't it?
Yeah. But I like kind of reading it like, they are to be happy in. Okay.
Where can we live but days? It's absolutely brilliant.
And I also really like that first line, which now, you see, there's a wonderful thing about talking to people about how the poem is for them. Because this first line now, solving that question, there's such a soothingness in that, isn't there? And I will now forever have the image of you reciting it to somebody in a toilet queue in tears, or wherever they may be in tears. And you often don't know what to do when you're in that place where you witness someone in tears in a moment of deep upset. So I think this could be the beginning of the campaign for reciting Philip Larkin to people that you find in this, yeah, in this space. I mean, I'm certainly taking that on as a personal mission myself. I'm not doing, you know, why am I not doing that? That's a perfect thing to have, to know a poem inside yourself and to be able to offer it and gift it to someone in that moment is just beautiful. And he gives you all that you need to do that, doesn't he, in this simple...
Because if that fails and that doesn't work for the person crying in the toilet queue, you're like, wait, and you recite another Philip Larkin poem, you're like, they fuck you up, your mum and dad, they may not mean it, but they do. So there's that one as well.
They fill you with the faults they had and add some extra just for you.
Cheers, Dad. Yeah.
Funny. Are there other poets that you like?
Yeah, it's quite a few.
Who else do you like?
I think my favourite poem growing up was by Maniza Alvi. Maniza Alvi, is that her name? Called Presents from My Aunts in Pakistan. Because my father's from Pakistan and I got presents from my aunts in Pakistan. I'm guessing maybe that's it. But it was good for a mixed race child. What was it called? The something anthology in school. And I would never listen until I heard that and it made my ears prick up. And it was nice to hear my story told. And there's a really lovely bit in it when she speaks about this thing called churia, which is like, it's glass bracelets. My aunties would send them over to me. And like, and this thing would happen, and she mentions it in the poem. But she talks about the excitement of receiving this gift. And then they're always tiny, tiny. The bracelets for some reason, so you have to put them on with soapy water to like slip them on, and I've got massive hands as well, so there's that. But they so often, like one or two would break and it would cut your skin and it would draw blood, and she writes about that, and it's a really, I think it's a good like metaphor for the conflict between two cultures. And she does it so well, so delicately, and so it's perfect, really. So that's one of my favourite poems also. I like a lot of poems, a lot of songwriters who write beautiful lyrics, like Nick Cave, my goth dad, and one of my favourites also. Many, many.
There's a lovely sort of interesting thing coming up here with a reference to Tim, the English teacher. And then this moment with this anthology. Let's talk about Tim a bit more. Tell me a bit more.
I had him on Facebook last week.
No, really?
Yeah, he hasn't accepted. I keep checking every day. Go on, Tim.
Come on, Tim.
Sorry.
Are you listening?
He might be listening.
Oh, let's make sure he is. We'll find him. We'll get him on. But I really love, kind of what you've talked about there, because I think very often, lots of people with amazing experiences of school, lots of people with really difficult experiences of school, lots of people massively alienated from poetry through school sometimes, but also often, as you've described, it being a kind of frequency that almost can kind of reach you where none of the other frequencies are making much sense to kind of your experience as a young person. So it's just lovely to have that kind of appreciation. So, I'm just giving a big shout out for that amazing work that those English teachers do, Tim and all of them.
Yeah, and there's this thing with, I always think about the difference between the lyrics of songs and poems. And I guess the biggest difference is the lyrics with songs, you hear them recited by the author themselves. And I guess one of the beauties of poetry is you give it your own voice. And so for ages, I thought it was the worst thing about poetry. Like, I want to hear Keith say that. And I want to hear you say that. Like, how would you say it? I'm sure it wouldn't sound like this. But there is, and then there is so much beauty, and it's quite empowering, really, putting your own voice to these words. And I think that's one of the things that I see people getting really excited about with poetry a lot of the time.
Yeah, we actually had a few people who we've met who, we've asked them if they've ever read it out loud, and if they're not performers, because we meet people from all walks of life, so it might be somebody who works in a library who's surrounded by books all the time, and they come along, we ask them to read the poem, just as we did you, and then we quite often say, do you read it out loud? You know, this is a poem that is kind of inside them. No, I don't do that. I haven't done that. So I really, I think this the business of the text as a sort of carrier wave, whoever's voice is connecting to it has the right to be with those words and has the right to be voicing them to the world in the way they need them. And it's really beautiful to hear you say that. Michael, I'm just wondering if you had any more questions.
I was just wanting to know if it kind of in terms of your writing, I don't know if are you writing at the moment? Do you write all the time? Is that a constant thing, or is it you go right now? I need to write a new album. How does that work for you?
Yeah, I write all the time, and I think it was a I think it was a response to like I've got two older brothers, and they're arseholes. They're brilliant. They're my best friends. But yeah, my brothers would always say things like, get a real job. And there's this thing when you're a full-time musician or artist, I guess. Like, I do make money from... I haven't asked anybody for money for years. Like, it's a job. And but there's a thing where you... I think I was trying to prove a point. Like, I'm going to work. Setting my alarm before everybody else. And I had shared a house with three other people. And they had, like, proper jobs. And people would call me lazy. And I hated that because, you know, I'd get up at 10. But I'm up until 5 in the morning. Like, oh, this gives a break. And I think that I was trying to prove a point at first. Like, I'm writing all the time. But actually, like, getting in the habit of writing all the time, it's a good thing. And, I mean, most of it is rubbish. But I revisit things that I've written all the time also. But I'm... there's, again, that difference between the words that I write as a musician and the words that you will write as a poet, because the words that I write, I don't like to see written on a page. As you can tell, this is how I speak and this is how I write and this is how I'll talk to you if we meet afterwards. And it doesn't, I don't think it does the words justice, just reading them on paper. I think they have to be said, performed with proper conviction and a northern accent. And actually, but part of it is this northern accent, because what it did when I started singing this accent, it just enabled me to have these beautiful big vowel sounds when I sing. And it's, because it's my main instrument, it gives you more to play with. But yeah, I really don't like people to look at my lyrics written. I much prefer people just to hear them and not for them to be read or written.
When can we expect to be hearing some new ones?
Actually, pretty soon. I took a bit of time off and writing currently. So I've got to pull my finger out, find some more words that rhyme. No, there's actually pretty soon, the end of the year, and then next, beginning of next year, the new album will be out. Terrifying. Awful. But yeah.
I want to ask one more thing about the writing, not on the page writing, because I know that we have quite a lot of writers listen, and I'm sure are here in the tent with us, and it's always this kind of fascination subject of kind of what do you do? Do you have any kind of rituals other than the kind of alarm clock and then not being called lazy that kind of take you into that space? What do you do?
I go on a lot of buses.
Okay.
No, honestly.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of pubs and I go on a lot of buses. Lots of things that I write. It's a phrase, an overheard conversation on a bus. And I've gotten to this point with writing at the minute, especially with like this really tired structure with songs where it's like verse, chorus, verse, bridge, chorus. And even though I'm not like a hugely commercial artist or poppy as such, I still do adhere to that format in some way. And I'm getting really frustrated by it, because what I'm realising is actually all my songs are essentially, it's one phrase. And then I flesh it out with some story either side. Oh, and she met him there and she went, wait. But actually all it is one phrase. And then I think it was the second album, our first or second album. It was just a really simple phrase, but I like the way this lady said it. She was an older lady talking to her granddaughter about love on a bus. And she was talking about her husband. He was called Ned. Imagine if I married him, Ned and Nad. But he and she, this little girl, she was asking her about it, and the grandmother just said, blah, 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 blah. And there was nothing else to do but fall in love. And just, it was lovely. It was like, I had no choice. But it was, it's a really, she kind of let herself, it was a really, I liked the way she said it. And then I had that phrase, and then tried to flesh it out with a story about the, even the grandmother talking to her daughter on the bus. And it just didn't work. It wasn't as poignant. And in fact, so that song ended up, it's a second album. It's called Nothing Else to Do. And it's just that phrase repeated over and over and over again, with different harmonies and layers, and sung with different emphasis each time. But yeah.
I mean, that kind of essentializing, that kind of distilling into the something just seems to really resonate with the poem that you've brought along as well, actually, that, you know, you can sort of hear and see. That's a beautiful kind of circle of conversation from what you've brought, that you were reading, that chimed and spoke to you, through to your own practice as a writer now, in terms of grabbing that essential phrase that kind of holds so much. Beautiful.
I think it might be time for us to ask Hannah to voice this poem, and for Nadine to kind of hear this.
I can't do a Geordie accent, so I'm not going to do an impression of Nadine. I love the idea that this poem, to be honest, when I first read this poem, I didn't really get it. Yeah. I got it, but I was like, it doesn't move me. But now that you've described it, I feel very moved by it and see it in a very different way, which is why it's always so lovely to hear why someone loves a piece of writing. And I love the idea that it's an anthem for sort of otherness in some way. So I'm not going to act it, because I can't act at all, but I will just read it. So just imagine that you've written this on your bedroom ceiling, and that you're lying down and staring at it, feeling very bored and frustrated, wanting to get back to London. Days by Philip Larkin. What are days for? Days are where we live. They come, they wake us, time and time over. They're to be happy in. Where can we live but days? Ah, solving that question brings the priest and the doctor in their long coats running over the fields.
Thank you.
Thanks, that was really brilliant. We're going to move on. Hannah.
Hi.
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 Tell us what poem you've brought.
Yeah.
And would you mind reading it out loud for us?
Sure.
Let's have some more poetry.
I brought a poem from a book that I was reading from last night, actually, when I was comparing the poetry stage. So if anyone's heard me do this before, I'm very sorry. I just really love it at the moment, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. It's written by a poet called Selena Godden, who is very alive. You're nodding, yeah? She's very alive, very vibrantly alive, and has written this amazing collection called Pessimism is for Lightweights, 13 Pieces of Courage and Resistance, published by Rough Trade. And the poem that I'm going to share with you is the title poem from the collection. It's just called Pessimism is for Lightweights. Think of those that marched this road before, and those that will march here in years to come. The road in shadow and the road in sun, the road before us and the road all done. History is watching us and what we will become. This road is all flags and milestones, immigrant blood and sweat and tears, built this city, built this country, made this road last all these years. This road is made of protest and those not permitted to vote, and those that are still fighting to speak with a boot stamping on their throat. There's power and strength in optimism, to have faith and stay true to you, because if you can look in the mirror and have belief and promise, you will share wonder in living things, beauty, dreams, books and art. Love your neighbour and be kind and have an open heart. Then you're already winning at living. You speak up, you show up and stand tall. It's silence that's complicit. It's apathy that hurts us all. Pessimism is for lightweights. There's no straight white line. It's the bumps and curves and obstacles that make this road yours and mine. Pessimism is for lightweights. This road was never easy and straight. And living is all about living alive and lively, and love will conquer hate.
Hannah, I love the kind of the thumbedness of this this collection that you brought in,
yeah,
and that's hanging around with you. When did you very first kind of connect with this collection or this poem?
Well, I've known Selena's work for a long time because we kind of gig on the same circuits, and I've always really liked her work but never loved it, like really loved it, until she wrote this and I was like, oh wow, I really love this, and this is my favourite collection at the moment. And I watched her at a gig and I noticed that when she was doing it that there was this really, really different energy in the room that I hadn't seen happening at a poetry reading or a gig for a really long time, and that was that everyone in the audience was like, yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, what are we going to do about it? And I felt like lots of art that I was going to see was just setting up, like pointing at the problems and going, well, everything's screwed then, isn't it? And like everything's hopeless and everything's over and everything's ruined. And I think that's a very general idea that we all feel at the moment in a number of ways. And it's not saying that's not true, but that what she was achieving with an audience was managing to take them on a journey through like, well, yeah, that's true. But then what do we do with that? And what happens? There's a whole group of people in a room together who've come to see a thing, and that's not a passive act. Like, you know, a load of people are in a room doing something. Why can that not be an action of some kind? And I'd like read about art as action and stuff, you know, at university, and I was like, oh, that sounds nice. But I don't think I had actually like felt what that was like to be in a room with it. And so I read that and I was like, yeah, good point. Very good point. Also, I'm a natural pessimist, so, and I quite enjoy being a pessimist, actually. I've made a whole career out of being a pessimist. So that was a good challenge to me to read that poem and go, do you know what? Like, it's not that useful to be pessimistic at the moment, is it? Like, there's loads of those, and we need more optimists and people who are like, well, what can we do?
I think, you know, there's another word I could bring in here, which is, you know, I think you're very honest. You're a very honest person. And, you know, sometimes that kind of honesty, pessimism barrier at the moment, it can be quite a slippery thing. Because if you're really trying to confront stuff and look at it in the face and say what's happening right now, it's quite hard not to then kind of fall into that. So
that's terrific. I think we do need to... I need to be reminded of the power of optimism. And I think it can, again, I'll speak for myself, I can feel that the small acts that I feel I'm capable of are just a bit meaningless. And actually to be reminded that they're not meaningless is very necessary, I think. So, yeah.
I think everyone feels like that. I'd be really surprised if we asked most people in this room, unless they're an activist, if they didn't feel that like their individual choices weren't in some way futile against like what seems like really insurmountable challenges. But what I like about this is the idea that, and it's not a new idea, obviously, it's not a novel idea, it's just being reminded that like everything incrementally adds up in everything, with everything, and it's to do with proportions and individuals and collectives and what hope does. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I read them this poem, who makes work about imagining instead of just going, oh, what's the future going to be like, and everyone goes ruined, going, well, what, how hard it actually cerebrally is to imagine what a good future might be like, and how we don't really have the muscle to do that in our brains at the moment. Not many people know actually how to do that. I don't know how to do that. I'm trying to learn how to do that, rather than just going, well, in the future everything's just rubbish. So I think this poem is as much about going, well, you know, optimism is really useful to us at the moment, because that's an action. If it translates into action, and so's hope, and so's imagining a different future whereby we can imagine ourselves out of some of the problems which we've got into. And also this poem, I like the fact that it's like, look, this is not the first time we've faced this. Like, we've been here before in terms of evolution. We just lived in a little cultural blip whereby we told ourselves a story that everything would be fine, and that, you know, we've tucked the wars out of sight. They're not in our zone, and all of that nonsense.
No, yes. I think that phrase of, you know, imagining ourselves out of here is really, yeah, really powerful phrase, really great. I want to ask you just about the gig where you first heard it, because you described something kind of happening for you, and I just wonder whether, you know, what the rest of the room was like. You know, was that happening for everybody? I'm sure it was, because Selena's an amazing performer, reader, poet, amazing woman. Because sometimes when you have those moments of something really striking you, and you're in a kind of public context, it can feel very kind of trippy or slightly weird. So yeah,
I think it was actually here last year or the year before, and intense here. Obviously, a lot of people are in the poetry tent, what used to be the poetry tent, but. Often people go in there to have a nap or because it's raining, and often everyone's quite quiet, and you could really tell that everyone was having a very active experience by the fact that people were kind of nudging each other. A lot of people were sitting up from lying down. Some people stood up and applauded at the end, and poetry audiences are very well behaved. That's the culture of being a poetry audience. You all know the like poetry nod. which is the highest form of approval that you can get at a poetry gig, and someone, or like the poetry gasp. For my friend Joe Dunthorne has got like a pyramid of needs, like with the top of the pinnacle of the poetry appreciation for a poetry audience is they go, yeah. So yeah, everyone was just very active in that. And also it was very interesting to see how many people wanted to come and talk to her afterwards. So I did some of her poems last night when I was comparing, and loads of people came up and had conversations with me. And I often have conversations with audience members, but like not that many. And I was like, well, that is the power of Selena's work, that people are like, yes, and blah, 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 and yeah, they want to have a conversation with you about it afterwards. So yeah, just
it's
active.
Very active, isn't it, Liz? Yeah. But you speak up, you show up and stand tall. It's silence that is complicit. Got some fight in it.
It's got some fight in it. She's got another poem. I'm not going to move. Well, I won't read you the other poem, but like, she's got another poem in here about courage being the muscle that we all need at the moment to make ourselves be active. Otherwise, we're just passive and weak.
But it's active and it's got fight. But it's also, you know, it's love will conquer hate. It's, you know, it's about love. It's love for each other. Love for planet and all the rest of it.
My friend Emma, who's in the audience, she said a really nice, I read her the poem earlier, and she said a really nice thing about this poem, which I really liked. She said, oh, because it's a poem about we're the people, we are all the people that we've been waiting for to come and solve the problem. And I was like, yeah, good point, Emma, thank you for that. She's saying over there. yeah very useful to have clever friends.
Now Nadine was talking about her Tim. Obviously we all know who Tim is. But we found out in the little green room tent that Hannah and I went to the same school. And did we have the same... Who was your English teacher at school?
I had a really amazing English teacher, actually. I would have probably not stayed in school or gone to university if it hadn't been for my English teacher. Because my attendance rate was really bad at school. Had lots of family complication things going on. And I think the general principle was if you had less than 60% attendance, you got kicked out. And I think my attendance was like 45% or something like that. And she was really amazing and just really kept me included and active. She's called Miss Jackie Smith at County High. And she is amazing. And she took me to a university and went, I think you're really good at English. I think you should do an English degree. And I went, no, I don't want to. I'm going to go and waitress for a year, which I did. I love waitressing, actually. And then eventually I went, oh, yeah, maybe I'll go. Fine. And I did. And
where
then
did, where did you waitress in Saffron Walden?
I did. There used to be a coffee shop there called Gluttons.
I know it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. There's like two stories of English teachers who have absolutely changed the course of your lives. I mean, it's like incredible.
It's sorry, am I allowed to butt in?
Yeah.
It's just... I was up till like daft o'clock last night writing this speech, but it's my last album was like heavily political, and I was like, I'm not going to get on that stage and not say fuck all about what just happened recently, the past few days, when people start chanting send her back, send her, am I going to be quiet about that?
Yeah.
I need to...
That's happened to you?
Well, no, send her back Donald Trump was addressing an audience, and then they broke out into this deafening, awful chant. And I wrote a song in response to people telling me to go back to where I come from. They didn't mean South Shields. And I'd happily go back to South Shields. But, and I was up all night trying to write something, because I thought, if I'm going to get on a stage in front of however many people... then you need to say something of worth, and I don't just want to ad-lib it after 10 gin and tonics or whatever and muck it up. But actually, I should... If you don't mind, it's perfect.
It is perfect.
It's proper, proper perfect, because it's this is what people need, you know, and it's like, what do you do to battle this like hate speech? What do you do to actually properly battle it? And yeah, you do share information on social media and stuff like that, but what action do you take if you are a pacifist? You know, I do want to kick the shit out of a lot of people, but I'm not that person, and that's not going to get us anywhere. These words are powerful and they're brilliant, and it's a real call to arms to say, you talk to that your neighbour, you talk to all these people that are currently feeling displaced, unloved and attacked by this kind of speech, and you show them more love, and that in itself is huge action, and that it does so much. So I'm going to borrow.
You're welcome to, I've been thinking a lot about that recently too, in that, like, you know, we have the great privilege of it being like our job to, as I'm sure it is some other people's too, of to like get a room full of people to listen to us for a little bit of time. And that's a privilege, right? Like, you know, the biggest commodity anyone has, regardless how wealthy they are, is their time. Like, you know, you guys giving us your time now, that's a, it's a gift to us, it's to each other. But so I can't honestly say that in my work or practice I've ever really thought, what am I actually using that time for? Like, what am I actually giving to those people? I've just thought, well, I've written some stuff and I'm going to share some stuff with these people now, and they're going to like it or they're not going to like it, and that's how this is going to go. And then I thought recently, well, that's a little bit lazy, isn't it? Like, I got a bit more responsibility than that, in that if I'm going to ask people to listen to me, what am I actually going to say? What am I going to use that for? And you know what? I looked at my own work and I was like, yeah, I mean, tenuously, I can say some of this is about important stuff. But actually, I haven't really managed to do that in my work yet. But Selena has. So I was like, well, I'll just use hers. I did ask her. She did say yes. So I will get there. I haven't achieved it yet, but I just thought, well, at least I can start talking about some of that stuff. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's a massive misconception. Sorry.
No, you're wrong. Yeah, you're wrong.
You're wrong. Because there's like, no, it's what I've realised. I think about this stuff all the time, and it's like people going, oh, well, political artists are so important, and you're just, and I started to believe me own, and I was like, I'm fine. No, I'm not. But also what's really, really important is, like, yes, you need people to document the times that you live in, but you also need people to document your heartache. That is important. You need people to make you laugh, and you need people to make music or to write things to help you escape as well. These things are vital. So I disagree with you, and I think that you're making brilliant, brilliant work, and your work's important.
I think the two can sit alongside each other. I've certainly, though, had conversations, I'm sure this must happen to you too, whereby you do a set, you have a chat with some audience members later, and you probably go to like a real variety of environments and countries and demographics, and sometimes there's an assumption of the environment that you go into that you agree with the political beliefs of the people who you are there talking to. So I may have done a set of poems about heartache or whatever, and then someone come up to me and be like, oh, so, and then start having a racist conversation with me, and I'm like, I'm a guest here, how do I go about going, actually, that, and I'm like, well, I haven't demarcated anything, I've just kind of gone, well, I'm just going to keep it, you know. Yeah, it's a really personal choice, isn't it? But like, I certainly feel that I was just being a bit irresponsible personally, in that I just wasn't using every tool in the box. So I'm going to try and aim for a balance between the stuff about like heartache and family and all those other very important things. But just like, yeah, I just needed to add a bit more of this stuff in as well.
I'm really sorry to have to be doing this because I could just, you know, be in this conversation for much longer, but time is getting the better of us. I'm going to ask Nadine if you wouldn't mind. Yeah. Just have a read through it.
It's long though, mate.
No, I'm sorry.
Think of those that marched this road before, and those that will march here in years to come. The road in shadow and the road in the sun, the road before us and the road all done. History is watching us and what we will become. This road is all flags and milestones, immigrant blood and sweat and tears, built this city, built this country, made this road last all these years. This road is made of protest and those not permitted to vote and those that are still fighting to speak with a boot stamping on their throat. There is power and strength in optimism, to have faith and to stay true to you, because if you can look in the mirror and have belief and promise, you will share wonder in living things, beauty, dreams, books and art. Love your neighbour and be kind and have an open heart. Then you're already winning at living. You speak up, you show up and stand tall. It's silence that is complicit. It's apathy that hurts us all.
Pessimism
is for lightweights. There is no straight white line. It's the bumps and curves and obstacles that make this road yours and mine.
Hey,
Pessimism.
Pessimism.
Is for lightweights. This road was never easy and straight. And living is all about living alive and lively. And love will conquer hate. Pessimism.
It's absolutely beautiful, and thank you so much, Hannah, for bringing it in, and thank you for the first sort of combined reading. So that was lovely. We're coming towards the end of our time, Michael. I can't quite
believe
that.
I've got one
that.
Last poem I'd really like to read,
There
is a very particular reason especially that's come out of our conversation, so listen out for that. I'm going to read this one. It's Ars Poetica number 100. It's by Elizabeth Alexander. Poetry, I tell my students, is idiosyncratic. Poetry is where we are ourselves, though Sterling Brown said every eye is a dramatic eye, digging in the clam flats for the shell that snaps, emptying the proverbial pocketbook. Poetry is what you find in the dirt in the corner, over here on the bus, God in the details. The only way to get from here to there. Poetry, and now my voice is rising, is not all love, 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 and I'm sorry the dog died. Poetry, here I hear myself loudest, is the human voice. And are we not of interest to each other?
Thank you, Michael. Fantastic. Beautiful. So a huge thank you to all of you for coming and being with us, the Poetry Exchange here at Latitude, and a huge round of applause and a massive thank you to our two fabulous guests, Hannah Jane Walker and Nadine Shah.
So there we go, Fee. Our first live podcast recording. How was it for you?
Michael, I've got to say that I had that experience. I don't know if you've ever had this, when you drive home and you can't remember what route you came. You did a whole hour's journey home and you've no idea what the traffic was or anything. You were just, and as soon as it finished and we stepped off outside the tent, I was in that kind of space.
It was all a bit of a blur.
It was all a bit of a blur in the after. However, in the during, it was not at all a blur.
No, that's right.
It was all very, very sharp.
Yeah. And then after we recorded the episode, we went to see Nadine perform. And we were right down the front. And she sang right to us on a couple of occasions. And it was just the most exciting thing ever.
It was extraordinary.
Isn't
what
she
a
amazing?
Gig. She is amazing. There are many, many aspects of her work, as was evident in the conversation, which kind of really resonated with what both poems were speaking about in a way. Honesty, confronting stuff, saying what's going on, and at the same time finding that space of human kindness and reaching for something loving and positive and neighbourly and good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what my mind-blowing experience was.
It was lovely for me the way all of that came out of the conversation between our two guests, and in a way the conversations between the two poems, you know. I thought that was something that we hoped would happen, and of course we didn't really know how that would work, and I think we were very lucky with our two guests and with our two poems, but really with both our guests, that they were so open and just there and present and kind of into the conversation, you know.
It was
a really great thing.
Yeah, it was incredibly easeful, having had quite a lot of preparation in the run up. It was then, it just all took
care
of
itself. There we go. Took care of itself.
Went into stereo there.
Yeah.
So a massive thanks to our two guests, Nadine Shah and Hannah Jane Walker.
And of course, there are some other people we'd like to thank as well. Very heartfelt thanks to Kirsty at Latitude who invited us and whose idea the Listening Post was. And the idea behind it was for podcasts that already and habitually record their podcasts in front of an audience to come, but also to create an opportunity for podcasts like ours to try that, to have that experiment. And that's been something that's been so useful for us. So our thanks to Kirsty and to Andy, who hosted the Listening Post so brilliantly and made us feel so at home and did such a brilliant job.
Yeah, he was fantastic. So obviously, to reiterate our massive thanks to Selena Godden for allowing us to use Pessimism is for Lightweights, and also to Faber and Faber for use of Days by Philip Larkin. And an extra special thank you to Elizabeth Alexander, whose poem Michael read at the end there, Ars Poetica, #100, I believe. There was this sort of superb bit of serendipity that the very mentioning that Nadine had made about her writing process as a songwriter of being on the bus, which is a reference in the poem as well, was there. So that was really beautiful. And it was just fantastic to be able to email Professor Elizabeth Alexander, such a notable poet, and say, we're doing this thing over here in a festival at the UK. Can we read the poem, your poem? And to get, you know, pretty much straight back, yes, look forward to hearing it. It's just lovely when people are really open to the work happening and being out there and voices various giving voice to it.
We would be really interested to hear how you found this episode. It does produce a different kind of conversation, I think. We spend less time with one poem, I guess. But it would be great to hear back from you how you found listening to it.
So head over to the website. There's contact details there. Really easy to get in touch with us, or through Twitter or any of the usual kinds of modes. I don't know, but I imagine we might have quite a few people who are listening for the first time. So if you are new to the podcast, welcome and thank you. And do press subscribe so that you can get all the future episodes as they come along.
And if you want to keep some poetry exchange in your life, of course, there's a whole catalogue now of conversations with people about poems that have been friends to them. And you can find them on our website, poetryexchange.co.uk.
So we're going to take a break for September. Hopefully this extra long edition will keep you going. We'll be back in October with a new episode, and we really look forward to that. And until then, thank you for listening.